This week's episode of Mobile Agent TV was recorded live from RE/MAX Recharge in Toronto. We brought you a real estate roundtable with three amazing guests, Lori Van Dinther, Jeff McGowan, and Keith Roy. We talked real estate in the media, the importance of business culture, best advice for new agents, and much, much more.
Welcome to Mobile Agent TV, live from RE/MAX Recharge in Toronto. I am Michael Thorne. Oh, wait, I already messed it up. I am Michael Thorne of RE/MAX Little Oak Realty. Our co-host, Dave, is in New Jersey. Dave, if you're watching, we miss you. Hopefully, we'll see you in Boston for the live show out there. So we're out in Toronto for a great event that's touring four cities, Indianapolis, Minnesota, Boston, and here in Toronto. And we're just actually finishing up a rebar camp here. So as always, you can interact with us live on Twitter using the hashtag MATVLive and get us at Mobile Agent TV. Next week's show, we have Glenn Shimkus from DocuSign coming on the show at our regular time, Friday, September 30th. At 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern. And there was a big announcement that RE/MAX and DocuSign made at the Broker Owner Conference, this alliance between those two brands. And I was fortunate enough to be on a number of calls with DocuSign in the last week or so. And the details are going to start coming out tomorrow, but we're going to dive into all that. And it's going to be a really huge value, not only for brokers, but for team leaders and for agents within the RE/MAX system. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce today's guests. We got three amazing guests. All doing, or Keith and Lori are doing breakouts tomorrow. So we'll first introduce Lori Van Dinther. And as always, we read out our guest's 160 Twitter bio. You can get Lori on Twitter at Lori Van Dinther, L-O-R-I. And it reads, dedicated Burlington realtor with over 22 years of experience, resourceful, proven track record, LoriV.com/blog. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Quick history in real estate for our viewers.
So I've been licensed for 23 years, been with RE/MAX for 22 of those 23, and really a big networker, focus my business on repeat and referral. I have a partner, her name's Kimberly. She's an awesome asset to our team. I love my brokerage, I love the brand. And I love all the events that RE/MAX has. It's just a fun business to be in.
Awesome. Now, Kim Miner was supposed to be on the show. All the promos had Kim. She is, I think, either in an airport in North Carolina or in Chicago right now trying to get here. So,
But not here.
Filling in for Kim Miner is Jeff McGowan. Jeff's 160 Twitter, by the way. At Jeff and Bobby, everything's Jeff and Bobby, right?
Of course.
So at Jeff and Bobby, in the 160 Twitter bio reads, top producing Ottawa RE/MAX realtors, business partners, life partners, golf partners, travel partners, pretty much partners in everything but crime. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
But Bobby's the boss.
She's the boss. And there's no doubt about that. So you've got a long history as well in the real estate industry.
Yeah, I've been around for a while now, almost 32 years. Started at RE/MAX back in the days when nobody started at RE/MAX right off the course. It's worked out pretty well. Had an opportunity to actually start our RE/MAX franchise and build that from three people to 82 people. Sold it last November, back in sales, a little less complicated life, shall we say, at this point, but having a gas.
Awesome. And then last but not least, Keith Roy. You can get him on Twitter at Realtor Keith Roy. And I think maybe my favorite 160 Twitter bio, because you've got another 100 characters you can use. It simply reads, realtor, speaker, and trainer, a solid 7. Welcome to the show, Keith. Your history in the real estate space.
Well, I've been I'm a rookie here, which is rare as of late. I'm 10 years in the business. I was with a different brokerage in Vancouver for 9 of those years. Last year, I moved my team over to RE/MAX. I've got a team of 5 agents, and that's been growing as the years have gone along. Sell in the Vancouver market. Work primarily by repeat and referral. And I do a lot of media commentary around the Vancouver real estate market, ethics, market dynamics, et cetera.
Okay. And actually, that's really what I wanted to dive in to begin with you, Keith, because this little setup here that we've got going on isn't new to you. And as someone who does his business just outside of the Vancouver market, I see a lot of you in the media, especially in the last year or so. So as an agent, how does that affect relationships with other agents? How does it affect relationships with the public? How does something like that, is that something you would encourage other people to sort of become a relationship, become that expert? Because you are the go-to guy, Globe and Mail and a lot of other sources for commentary on the marketplace. So pros and cons of putting yourself in that position.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to take a position on something. And it's interesting. We had a sales meeting in my office the other day and I asked the question, how many people here believe the market will go up in the next 6 months in Vancouver? Nobody put their hand up. I said, how many believe it will go down? Nobody put their hand up. No one's willing to take a position on anything. 6 months ago in Vancouver, if you had said, how many people believe houses are worth more 6 months ago, 6 months from now than they are today, everybody would have put their hand up. Realtors are willing to predict when the market's going up. Realtors are willing to predict when things are going to be good, but we're unwilling to share that advice when things are going to be bad. We're unwilling to point out our own flaws. The answer of a typical real estate board across the country when the Globe and Mail reports that realtors are acting like scoundrels and doing bad things is to say, all realtors are good people. We're prohibited by the CREA Code of Ethics of speaking ill of our colleagues. But at the end of the day, there are some realtors who are bad for consumers. And I'm not afraid to point out that some of those things need to be changed. Some of the regulatory bodies need to take action on those things. And we need to increase barriers to entry and improve our ethics as a profession.
So do you think taking those position in such a public way is that's your ethic, you feel it needs to be said, or is there an overlining you position yourself as the expert in the public of building trust? Or is it just, Keith, I know you and you're like, this is my position, I'm willing to say it, or as a business, is there a benefit from taking that position even if it's hard to take it?
Yeah, I did a survey of my client base a number of years ago, and what I discovered is that people want to hire me because I'm nice and I'm likable and I'm friendly and they trust me. But at the end of the day, what I found is the reason people used me and referred me was because I was a shark. That's what every client actually wants. They want the person who gets them the best deal. They want the person who takes a position and takes a stance. And what I realized is my brand is actually the honest broker. That's my approach to everything. I'll be honest with you when the market's going up. And so you can trust me when I tell you the market's going down and vice versa. And I'll be honest with you about where we're at on regulatory issues, where we're at on consumer protection issues. So I'm not afraid to go out and say what I believe is the God's honest truth about what's going on in our industry. And does it put me up against a lot of my colleagues? Yeah. I take a lot of flack from anybody who's sitting on a board of organized real estate, receives a salary from organized real estate, gets flown around to conventions on the dime of other realtors. They tend to not like what I'm pointing out. But when we get into the nuts and bolts of how our operations are run across the country, there's an enormous amount of money spent on all of the wrong things. And we as realtors aren't benefiting from it. We're losing the MLS. We're losing the public's trust. We're losing consumer belief. And we're just not doing a good job at it. And I think we need to change and become a serious profession.
Leveraging media in the past, Jeff, as an agent that's being out, is that something that we should be leaving up to the broker owner? Should individual agents start cultivating relationships with certain reporters to be giving them some insight to the market? Or should we be stepping back and saying that's for the local boards to be the relationship with the media, all different parts of it, I suppose?
I think there's an argument to be made on both sides of that equation. I think individual agents have got a lot to contribute in terms of media relations. They've got a unique insight in the trenches, per se. Broker owners have their own unique insight in terms of seeing the business from a macrocosm. The boards have their own insight in terms of running a conglomeration of different brokerages and having all of those realtor members feeding information to them. But everybody's got their own perspective and everybody's got their own take on it.
Yeah.
And they're all valid. I really liked what you said, Keith, about being the honest broker. I mean what you say and say what you mean in all things in life. And I think in real estate, it's every bit as important. That's the way to do business. Say what you think.
Yeah. And, you know, you blog, right? And one of the comments we saw in the Vancouver marketplace was, I wish people would stop blogging about what's happening in the marketplace and leave it up to the board. I think as my individual agent, my clients want to hear what my opinion, that trusted relationship of 20 years that I've had with them, what's Michael's opinion about what's happening in the marketplace, and especially, you know, especially like a Globe and Mail is seeing it at such a huge, big, 30,000 foot view, but what's happening in Richmond is different than what's happening in North Vancouver, which is happening different in different marketplaces. So I think it's almost our duty to inform our clients about what we think is happening in the marketplace and taking a position. When you're blogging out there, who are you speaking to? Someone you've never met before, Lori, or are you saying it sort of to your past clients? What's sort of the mindset of when you do put content out there?
So I would say generally it's more for my clients and or people who are researching, you know, looking for an agent. I'm finding more and more they will, you know, they're going on your website, they're reading your blogs, they want to know what you have to say. And I agree with Jeff as well that you diverse opinions, like you've got we're in the trenches as salespeople, we're in the trenches. And I think that, you know, the boards and the, you know, certain authorities, they get the ripple effect where we can feel it like happen that moment, right? So, and I think our clients, they are looking to us for our, you know, we've got our finger on the pulse. They want to know what our opinion is. I mean, a lot of people also believe, and it's, I mean, I think it's great that we've got someone who's so active in the marketplace, actually speaking to the media, wherever it be, because otherwise the media will make whatever they want of it.
Yeah.
And it isn't necessarily accurate.
And dear friend of all of ours, Tony Joe, I mean, he's the same position. He's gone out there in the media and he's put out his opinion out there. And I know that we've had a couple of conversations and sometimes it sits wrong with the odd person, but as long as you're coming from a place where you're telling the truth and or being as honest as you can with the information, then that's at least, that will in history show that's your position.
This is the same advice that we're giving to our clients. If I'm willing to give this advice in private, I should be willing to give that advice in public.
Absolutely.
And that's where most realtors get scared of the media. Like, we'll tell our clients that the market's going down, but then we'll go out in public and say
everything's rosy.
Fine, everything's good. And it's okay. There's different reasons to buy at different times, and that's fine. But we make excuses for the press about why the market is the way it is, and then we tell our clients the reality of why they need to reduce their price. Why are we doing that? That's why the public doesn't trust us. There's this disconnect. We're speaking the truth in private. We're lying in public.
Yeah. Completely switching gears. You know, I was watching a video of an agent down the States who put out kind of sort of a training video, and we have a great rapport. But he was talking about how when we adopt a new way of marketing, we get excited about it. We put some energy on it, and just before it starts to work, we sort of look for the next shiny object, and you're at the next conference and you're trying the next thing out and you put some energy in it. You don't, when do you know, as three people that have very successful businesses, at what point do you have to do it consistently, persistently, over and over again to actually see results? Because nothing's going to happen without consistency. And at what point do you say cut bait and say that's not an avenue that worked? How do you, Keith, how do you do something over and over again marketing wise? At what point are you willing to say it's not working? And at what point, how far do you have to go to actually see that it does?
Yeah, in our coaching and training organizations that I've been part of, what we've learned is that you can get 20 deals out of every lead source there is. And that's the point at which you can consider yourself having mastered that lead source when you should add another one. When you think of your business, think of it in concentric circles. Like if you take a rock and throw it into a pond and it ripples out, well, maybe the rock is, I like to think of the rock as your database. People who know, like, and trust you. You throw the rock in the pond, that produces opportunities for open houses, and you master open houses. And that produces opportunities for you to go around and talk to for sale by owners in the neighborhood. And that produces the opportunity to talk to expireds. And that ripples out. You should be able to get 20 out of every lead source when you're doing it. When you cut bait, that's a financial issue. You just look at that and you say, how much am I willing to invest over what period of time? If we look at farming, you got to figure you're invested there for 2 to maybe 3 years at this point. It used to be 2, but I would suggest that that's 3 now, because you're very few people are getting that mail. So you're having to do community marketing and community farming in a different way. Open houses, well, those are week on week. But if you get consistent and good at doing it week after week after week, you're going to start seeing a return on that investment. And you're going to get better at doing it yourself. You're going to hone your craft. You're going to know what questions they're going to ask. You're going to know what questions to ask them.
So what advice then, Lori, do you give a newer agent that says, look, I've been doing this farming thing for upwards of 2.5 months now, and I'm just not seeing the results? like, how do you say to someone who doesn't have, you know, isn't a year and a half into their business where they're starting to see that, or even 20 years into their business, what advice do you say? No, if you keep doing this particular thing, you're going to see some results. Because I think that's people... And short, I think maybe more now attention span wise than ever. What advice is saying, no, you really have to commit at top notch quality for X amount of months before you can even measure whether it's a success or not?
Well, and I believe, and I do mentor agents and have in the past, and I really, and I tell them, look, you need to pick one or two specific, and I tell them one or two, but I mean, if you know they have a big attention span, maybe they can pick three or four, but whatever it is, but special, like really focus on it. And I tell them, give it at least 8 months to a year to see that ripple effect. And I'm geofarming is different, or farming, you know, flyers, putting them out in neighborhoods and stuff. That does take, thank you for that. I would have never thought 3 years would be that gauge, but I can see how it'd be longer. So I just suggest to them that they, you know, pick something, do it really well, get to know it really well, whatever that is. You know, if you're a techie person and you're going to be on social media and you're going to be blogging and you're going to be on Facebook, and if that's your, you know, what you want your focus to be, because I also tell them, whatever it is you're passionate about, whatever you feel comfortable doing, don't go against your own grain, right? So if for me it's networking and belly to belly with people, and you know, like going to visit clients, and mine is all about personal contact with my, and I nurture my database like crazy. So that's my gig, but it doesn't mean it's everybody else's, right? So whatever it is, I tell them, make sure you like doing it. You can't tell an agent, we'll go do, you know, an open house every Sunday for a year. You know, if they're not, if they don't feel comfortable with it, then it's going against their own core and their own grain. So they should pick something they like doing and then stay consistent with it.
Jeff, how do you go back and having a career as long as you've had, and the industry certainly has changed. I mean, a lot of things has stayed the same, and a lot has changed completely. How do you go back and sort of audit behaviors and marketing styles and say, okay, we need to eliminate that, or it's not returning like it used to? How do you cut bait on some things? Not because you're not good at them anymore; they're just not as effective as they used to be. And then you could take that energy and. How do you take a look and run it like a business, I suppose?
You've got to know your numbers. And I think any coach will tell you that. If you don't know your numbers, you're sunk. So the way I always equated this is, it's like we're running a store. We've opened a store. And for new agents, you open a store, you don't expect to make a profit the first year. You probably don't expect to make a profit the second year. But you're building a business. So I always taught our agents that you had to identify and implement anywhere between 5 and 6 separate revenue streams. And you can probably identify 10 to 12. Anybody at this table could. Open houses, database management, networking at conferences, those are a few examples. So you kind of have to look at each one of those revenue streams and see where the return is coming from. Every year at the end of the year, we sit down and figure out where the transactions have come from for that year, what the revenue stream has been for that revenue generator every year. And we sat down and did that finally after 2 years ago, and after a couple of years of me talking to Bobby and saying, you know what, print advertising is just not returning anything.
Yeah.
And we were heavy print advertisers.
Yeah.
We sat down in two consecutive years doing 120 transactions a year. We couldn't identify a single transaction in 2 years coming from print. So finally, pulled our print, moved that money into SEO, moved that money into web presence, that kind of thing, and we're getting a huge return from that. So it's just a matter of being on top of it, knowing your numbers, track where your business is coming from, track your results, track your revenues, and sit down and do an analysis.
And this is the conversation I quite have with agents that say, okay, now I'm supposed to do video? I'm busy all the time, and now I'm supposed to do video? And I really think is, no, you're supposed to stop something that isn't going to return like video will. Exactly. You have to stop print media and put that money into SEO. I don't think it's always add more onto. It's in lieu of something that isn't as productive. And I think that comes back to that mentality of being willing to run your real estate business like a business, opposed to looking at one transaction and go, hey, where did your deals come from last year? Well, I don't know. You should know exactly where they come from. I know you know your numbers better than anyone, your past client numbers. You know them down to what it costs per client event and the return on a deal. And that's how agents should be running their business.
It'd be easy to spend 150% of our gross revenues generating business.
Yeah.
Well, I like what Keith said too, in adding, you know, and it, that's so, when we're talking new agents, if I'm mentoring them, that's why I'm saying I would tell them to start with the top three or four that they feel comfortable with. But I love what he said, because actually even veteran, like I'm 23 years and you know this to be true. I'm like, video, but I'm willing to add it So the print ad, it's gone. And now, okay, so what comes, so the add-on is now, you know, it's a transition. I mean, the public shifts, the market shifts.
And it's just not a real estate thing. It's a culture. Everything's different.
Yeah,
the business for everybody.
And culture, like how they think is different. So we have to move with them. We have to transition with the public and what they want and need.
And it shifts faster now than ever before. Things just change so fast.
And some things don't change. And the thing that hasn't changed is the way you run your business and you run your business and you run and we run our business. The best value we have is from the people that we've already done business with, who we've proven our value to, who we already have no like and trust with, and maintaining those relationships. You said it, your CRM, your past clients, yours too as well. Mm-hmm. And you like to spend a lot of time belly-to-belly with your past clients. But as a new agent who doesn't have any past clients, if you could give some advice in the 2016 world that we're living in, where we all built our businesses, a while ago before everything changed, what advice would you give to a young agent that would help them start to cultivate enough business that they could look back 10 years down and say, now I can just really take good care of my database because that's where the main money is going to come from? What advice would you give a young agent?
Here's the advice I give all new agents. Write a list of everybody you know and don't rule anybody out. If you think that their brother's a realtor or maybe they're your kids, your kids' parents, everybody you know in your database, write them all out. And then try and get as much information as you can. If you have their name and phone number, get their address. If you have their name and address, get their phone number. If you have them on Facebook, get their address, get their email, get it all. Put it in a simple Excel format. Don't get caught up buying some fancy CRM for $100 a month that you don't need when you're doing real estate. Put it all in an Excel sheet. And then you're going to mail merge a letter, a print letter to everybody that you can find in there for the ones you don't. Stuff them all, put a business card in there announcing that you're a realtor and this is what you do now. Then you're going to mail 5 a day. Michael, if I asked you to make 30 phone calls tomorrow to past clients, would you be able to do that?
No.
People think that they can right off the bat. I'm going to mail it 100. I'm going to phone 100 this week. I'm going to have all these deals. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
We got a whole audience here. I bet you all, none of you have phoned 30 people in a single day in the last 5 years. Correct. And imagine if you did, how good your business would be. But you haven't done it. So you're going to mail 5 letters a day. And then 2 days later, because Canada Post is pretty good, you're going to phone 2 days later those 5 people. And the next day you're going to mail 5. And then 2 days after that, you're going to phone 5. So you're going to be mailing 5 letters a day. You're going to be phoning 5 people a day. Now, the average new agent knows about 100 people, right? And they might know a couple more. They might know a little, but you know about 100, maybe 150. So you mail out these 5 letters. You make these 5 phone calls. Your goal with the 5 phone calls is to get 1 coffee meeting and just 1 casual sit down per day with 1 of those 5. And the ones you don't get on Tuesday, you phone them on Wednesday. So that on Friday, you're not phoning 5 new, you're just phoning the ones you missed throughout the week. And it's a simple conversation. Again, I'm telling you to phone people you know. This is not a hard phone call. They want to hear from you. Hi, it's Keith. I'm sure you've heard. I've just moved over to RE/MAX. I'm new in real estate. I'm really excited to get my career going. Real estate is a sport in Canada, and everybody wants to talk about it. That's a natural conversation piece. You don't have to bring up the market. You don't have to bring up interest rates, none of that. It's just going to happen for you. You can have simple conversations. And then before we all used to have real jobs at some point in our life, and we had those real jobs. We couldn't go for coffee in the middle of the day. But if someone phoned us and wanted us to just break away from work for 15 minutes, we'd be super excited about that, to get away from the monotony of our otherwise terrible job. So you're going to try.
Rosy picture.
That's why we're all in real estate. Yeah. We couldn't handle that monotony. Yeah. So you're going to go out and you're going to go down and, I'm downtown on Wednesday. I don't care if you're downtown or not. Just tell them you are. Make it easy, casual, simple. Go down, have a 15-minute conversation, connect with someone face-to-face. If you mail 5 letters a day, make 5 phone contacts per day and have 1 face-to-face contact per day, over the course of the first 45 days of your business, I guarantee you will produce deals. You will find a buyer. You will find a seller. Someone will refer you. Someone will do business with you. Opportunities will just happen. There's also just something about being busy. We all know this. We've been in the business a long time. The busier you are, the busier you get.
Absolutely.
When the market goes slow and you slow down, you start doing nothing, and then nothing produces more nothing.
Yeah.
And having the purpose of 5 letters and 5 phone calls a day will jumpstart any new agent's career.
What's the context? Just having coffee? Is it the hard sales pitch? Is it just building relationships?
These are people who know, like, and trust you, who you haven't connected with because you both had jobs at the same time and couldn't get together.
Yeah.
it's not unreasonable that you would want to go out and connect with these people.
Yeah.
And then it's an easy thing to say. As you know, I'm in real estate. I've just started with, you know, Remax XYZ brokerage. A lot of my business comes from introductions and referrals from people like you. If you think of someone who's moving, please let me know. Or even better, who's the next person you know who's planning to make a move that I might be able to help? That's it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's that simple. Plant the seed in their mind for referral. And you start having these meetings week after week, and you're going to see results.
Advice, Lori, for a new agent to get them to a point where they have a great database of past clients.
List your parents' house. Just call them and say, hey, Dad.
You're moving.
Help me out. Can I list your house?
In lieu of that, you could list your own house
exactly.
too.
Exactly.
List your husband's house.
I was thinking of new, younger agents that maybe, anyway, So, all joking aside, I was going to go right for you. So they don't have a database, obviously. Yes, they have. So I was going to go the similar route, center of influence. Everybody has a center of influence. That's a very good, like, that's really great advice. And next time I'm mentoring somebody, I'll just tell them to call Keith because I would have been that structured about it. And I love that, right? Like, I need to structure more.
We all do.
I'm a little bit random sometimes. Yeah, so that's what I would say is really go after your center of influence. And you know what? We shouldn't even be just talking about new agents, right? So I know that was a question, but let's just say anybody whose business isn't where they want it to be, yes, you can nurture your database. But if you if that's not working, you know, do something with your center of influence. Community events, you know, the so agents who don't have a database or they've, you know, taken every person they know out for coffee and don't stop. Just, you know, okay, now attend a, you know, sponsor a community's a charity event. Like charity, I'm a big, big believer in charity and, you know, do it out of the goodness of your heart, but you're there, you're present. And you're
being
meeting
busy.
People. You're just, you know, you're meeting people and you're connecting. And like Keith said, everybody wants to talk about real estate.
Yeah, no doubt.
Ultimately, it's a people business. I mean, a lot of people think they get into real estate because they love houses, or they love decorating, or I watch HGTV. You got to love people.
Yeah.
That's what the at the core of it. That's what the success of this business is all about. You know, it's funny listening to you, Keith. I used to teach this stuff for 10 years on a regular basis. And we'd bring new agents on and we'd tell them the same thing. Sit down with the phone book. With all the professions, take out the yellow pages. Who do you know that's an accountant? Who do you know that's an undertaker? Who do you know that's a dentist? You know, make your database and then call them. And more often than not, they get to day three and then they'd say, oh, well, they're all saying no and they don't want to talk to me about this. And they'd quit. The end of the day, it's consistency and motivation that are going to be the difference between success and failure. And emotional resilience is probably one of the most important things you can have as a new agent. You can't be afraid of rejection. You have to take that no and turn it into, okay, I'm not much closer to a yes. Because if you get discouraged, it'll kill you. Absolutely kill you. So keep going, keep driving. When I first started in the business, the way that I got going, and I didn't have anybody really teaching me what to do, because back in those days, you started a Remax, everybody's too busy to talk to you. So I sat down with the newspaper at the time, when there were newspapers back in the old days, with the houses for sale by owner, and I would call from 6:15 until 9:15, every single night until I started to get appointments. And I got my first listing after a week and a half. I had people yelling at me. I had people hanging up on me and swearing at me and all kinds of things. I had a mirror in front of me, made sure I was smiling on every phone call, got appointments, and that's how I started my career. I used to do four open houses every weekend.
But with that tactic in a 2016 world with a millennial don't knock on my front door, does that, is that, has that changed? Because I used an analogy in the keynote that I did down on R4 in the spring, the idea that if someone came to my front door Sunday evening while I was watching the football game and having dinner with the family and tried to sell me gutters, I wouldn't trust you. You came to my front door. But if I posted on Facebook, hey, I need to replace my gutters, who'd you recommend? And three people said the exact same gutter company, I'd hire them in a heartbeat. So can we be the person that Is that know, like, and trust built that same way?
It can be.
It can be.
Sure. When I first started, Jerry Bresser wrote a great book called List More, Sell More. And I still use a lot of those dialogues 32 years later. And he probably wrote it 40 years ago. And one of the dialogues was when you were prospecting a FSBO, hi, I'm a real estate agent. Well, I don't want to talk to any real estate agents. Well, let me ask you one question. If my company was able to bring you an offer from a qualified buyer that was acceptable to you, would you accept such an offer from my company? Everybody and their dog was doing this dialogue. So I spun it. And I would say, hey, have you heard this before? Yeah, I've heard that 50 times in the last week, and you agents are a pain in the ass. Well, you know what? That's a canned sales pitch, and I think it's crap. But if you want to talk to somebody who's honest and real, I'd really be interested in an appointment to come over and have a look at your home and see if I might have a buyer for it. Could we come over Thursday or Friday? Worked like a charm. So I think you could spin it the same way with your example. Go knock on the door on Sunday night, you're watching football. Hi, I'm Jeff McGowan from RE/MAX. Look, I know you're really busy, but I know that you might possibly need a realtor or know somebody that needs a realtor. Here's a list of my Google reviews. I invite you to Google my name, check me out online, and see what people are saying. If you're interested, give me a call, and then follow up with them the next week.
Interesting.
Everything still works. You just got to find your sweet spot.
Yeah, that's true.
Everything does work. And you know what? And that was kind of one of the things Laura reached out beforehand. He says, well, you know, the mixed panel, the techie, not techie. I mean, the whole thing about this and having someone who's on a team and a former broker owner, and there's no one way to be doing this business. I think there's better ways to be doing this. I think the best way to do it is to play to your strengths and do what makes – because you're more likely to do it more often. But there's no right way or wrong way when all the ways come down to people.
Yep.
Creative ways of maintaining relationships with your past clients. You're a big past client guy. Talk about client events and how that's structured and how integral that part is to your business success.
Yeah, I started doing client events probably about 6 years ago. I actually had my most recent client event and arguably my most successful client event happened on Saturday. I had about 400 people to my house for a barbecue. And I don't have a particularly large house. I live in Vancouver. My lot is 32 feet wide by 121 feet deep. And I had 400 people through.
Intimate.
We went through 600 biscuits, 400 sausages, 65 pounds of brisket, 250 pieces of fried chicken, 40 bottles of wine, and a keg and a half of beer. So what I've discovered is that when you bring people into your space and they see you outside of where they normally see you, it's very hard for them to not do business with you in the future. So I like using my house, and I recommend this to people all the time. Think about the last time you bought a car. At some point, you were wondering, I wonder what kind of car the car salesman drives. Your clients are wondering the same thing about you. They want to know what kind of house the realtor lives in. Where does my realtor live? What did my realtor buy most recently? How did my realtor decorate his house? Has he done the renovation? Has she done the renovation? And so I started bringing people into my house. This started as a housewarming 4 years ago when I bought and renovated a house. And I've done it 4 years in a row. And we've consistently gotten more than 300 people. This year was a really big one because I built a new house and lots of people wanted to come and have a look at it. But when those people are in your home and they see me in, you know, jeans and a t-shirt hanging out in my backyard, that's a much different relationship. Yeah. It deepens the relationship. Even with 400 people on site, it's just a much deeper relationship to have with people. I run my client database. An effective client database should cost you about $200 to $220 per person per year for all the mail outs, the emails, the prizes, the referral gifts, the communications, and the client events.
So you don't know your numbers?
I don't know.
$220, 400 bottles of wine.
you got to know this stuff. Otherwise, I mean, I could have spent $25,000 on the party. I know exactly how much that party costs.
And what's the ROI of a $220 investment per past client?
I get a 22% return on my database. So what that means is for every 100 people in my database, I get 22 deals. Not necessarily from those 100, but from referrals or from introductions and spinoffs, et cetera. So if I've got a 300-person database, I can get 66 deals. I have an average commission of just over I have about $11,000 this year because the Vancouver market, like most of Canada, went up substantially. But $11,000 a deal, I know how many deals I can get on my database. I know what I can invest in my database, and I know what my results are going to be. So it's the most cost-effective way to generate business.
And as long as what you're doing is effective too, it's just not putting $220, it's putting 220 effective dollars, takes time to
I'd rather spend $220 on someone I know who likes and trusts me than on someone I don't know.
How big is your database?
My database is just over 300.
Just over 300?
Yeah.
So you're spending roughly $60,000 to return $250,000.
Yeah.
Those are good numbers.
It's great numbers.
That's business, but that's business mindset, though.
Everybody came to my house. We had a good time. There's a live musician. In the spring, I take 200 clients and their friends to a baseball game. We have the Vancouver Canadians. It's one of the farm teams for the Blue Jays. Yep. In February for Family Day weekend in British Columbia, I host an ice skating event. I rent out an ice rink, and people come and skate. don't be afraid of client events. I highly recommend this to anyone. Don't overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
That's what most people do. Yeah. They think it has to be too much or too big, or they hear that I had 400 people at my house. They're like, no, have 25 people to your house for a wine and cheese.
Yeah, the touch is the thing.
Great connections. Yeah. And here's the thing. You have to phone them ahead of time, invite mm-hmm. them, and even if they don't come, if you host a client event and nobody shows up, but you reached out and contacted them, you've already done your job.
I couldn't agree with that more. We've done, at Christmas time, we do something with our clients all the time. We try to shake it up all the time. But the fact that we invited them and they were unable to attend mm-hmm. still is a really great touch. Now, I'd rather have 15 minutes sure. with them to chat, but they feel like they're part of that. And then they see mm-hmm. the video afterwards and they feel like they got to partake in it and that yeah. sort of thing.
Sorry. I don't mean to jump no. in here. We do that with the home show every year. I know Lori does that. Do you
yeah, do
that in Vancouver? Home show is the best touch ever because you're only paying for the tickets that are redeemed, but everybody's getting two tickets that they think are worth $30 or $35 bucks. And a lot of the time, the people that don't go call say, I'm really sorry I couldn't go, but thanks so much for the tickets. Oh, and by the way, somebody's looking for a house to buy or sell. Or they give them to somebody and you've got another connection there.
Give them away.
And in my market, RE/MAX gets a better deal than the real estate board.
Yep.
That was one of the reasons we moved over. We just saw all these extra RE/MAX benefits. RE/MAX gets the home show tickets cheaper than the real estate board can negotiate.
So I just want to, because this is a big thing for me, right? There's a lot of things I don't do. And the one thing I really, really focus on is the client, my client database, parties, whatever, events, offerings, and just continuously showing them appreciation. So, and I do big events I try to mix it up too, as everybody else was saying, I'll do a movie. So, and it's the whole family. So that's an event for family, but then I've also started focusing on smaller ones, right? Like I want to do the VIP part of the Simplex Theater. So you invite 8 couples. Now there's only, a small group, you're interacting with them. It's VIP, and that's what I was going to say about the tickets too. Our home show tickets are VIP. So I also really like the smaller, more frequent. And then of course you get to be social more often, which mm-hmm. is my favorite thing to do. Right. And Keith is bang on, same for me. I had a client party at my home once and it was so well attended. And it was probably 12 years ago when I did the last one at my home and I hired somebody to come in and cook Teddy Reader, King of the Queue. It was awesome. We had a chocolate fondue. I had to kick people out of my house late at night. And people still today talk about it.
Yeah.
So it, you're right. And it makes you real. They want to know that real you, right? So I think do a bunch of things. I did do ladies events. If you're a guy, do a guy, like with golf, like take some clients.
I don't know. I might do a ladies event.
Yeah, there you go. and I again put a spin on my ladies event and I rented this awesome, it's called Paletta Park and it's a mansion. It's a really old mansion on the lake, on Lake Ontario in Burlington. And I actually, it was a free event to the ladies who came, but I did a minimum donation of $40 to Children's Miracle Network. And it was awesome. So we raised money for charity. I really connected and I asked, so I invited 40 women and I asked them all to bring a friend. And it was a wine and cheese and it was catered and a beautiful, and most people had not been in Paletta Mansion. So that's another thing that people really like is I found it to be helpful, find a venue or an event that a lot of people would like to go to, they've never been to, something like that that's kind of catchy, mm-hmm. Castle Lomontron, whatever it is. I like the smaller events, bottom line, because you can talk to each person as opposed to, and I know 400 people is a great party and I've done those too, but that's kind of,
it's tough to connect with your clients with 400 people in the room.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah. I don't know what the sensors are like on your
camera. No, it's YouTube.
But,
you're good.
But here's the thing. The principle behind all of this, people are looking for shit to do.
And free shit to do.
They are. As a realtor, you forget that other people are bored sometimes. Yeah. You always have to work. Your weekends are always full. You've always got another appointment. You've always got an open house you could do. You've always got an email. Yeah. There's a lot of people, young families, they're just looking for something to break up the day, switch things around.
Yeah.
And they're looking for things to do.
It is crew. Yeah.
Bruce, could you give us some water, please?
Aren't you also Hitchcock?
Oh, Tony, Joe, and Bruce Johnson, everyone. They know. I've been on the show. Both of them have been on the show many, many times.
Cameo.
Question. Let me see. Where was I going to go with the next question here?
Oh, don't let them win.
No, they did. They focused. Turn me off. Focus. I've been jumping into this conversation with realtors. Actually, we talked about it one of the breakout sessions today, and it's so interesting to me is this conversation of culture, because it has now been, I think, 4.5, 5 years since our team left where we were before and joined RE/MAX. And changing brokers and having the brokerage that we're at now, having an amazing culture that didn't come from where I was, to go bigger and to go to events like this that has a completely different culture on a bigger scale than existed, has changed the culture within our team and within our clientele. Mm-hmm. You have had a recent move. And because there's the corporate, the franchise teams, individual agents, the importance of culture is more, I'm way more aware of it now than ever before. As a former broker owner, going from 3 to 82, what role does culture play? And if you're in a brokerage that has poor culture, you, as an individual agent, I don't think you can expect that it will change tomorrow. Culture is a very thing that you need to protect at all costs. And I think it's very hard to heal a poor, sick culture. Talk about the importance of culture, how it affects the individual agents, whether you're on a team or not, within a brokerage.
Okay. Well, that's a wide-ranging topic. But culture is a living, breathing organism. And culture is essentially the conglomeration of everybody in the organization and how they interact. So the broker's role in that is to establish expectations, to establish opportunities, and to establish a certain guidance and nudge people in one direction or another. I haven't told very many people this over the years, but I never really set out to be a real estate broker. As a matter of fact, I probably would have cut my left arm off to not be a real estate broker. But there was a situation that needed to be rectified in our local market, and the culture of the company I worked with for 21 years was not healthy. So an opportunity arose, and I was approached to open the brokerage. So we started actually in the fourth bedroom of my house with Bobby, myself, and our partner Steve, and my assistant at the time, and created RE/MAX Affiliates Realty. So that was our culture, the four of us in the bedroom that we're using.
Were you able to maintain it through 82 people?
Absolutely. Because the tenet of it was, it had to be agent-centric, it had to be attentive to the agent's needs, it had to be equal, and that's why we called it RE/MAX Affiliates, because there was no pecking order, there was no hierarchy. Everybody's paying the freight at RE/MAX. Everybody pays a desk fee and an override in Eastern Canada, which is recent in Western Canada. But the fact of the matter is, if somebody's paying for a private office and they're only generating $80,000 a year GCI, does that make them less valuable to the organization than someone who's doing $180,000 or $800,000 or $8.5 million or whatever they're doing? Everybody's got a role and everybody's important. And that was the centerpiece of our culture. Everybody participated. We had huge buy-in to community events, Santa Claus parades. People were volunteering dozens of hours to nail nails on float and staple stuff on floats. People would come out for any charity initiative we did, Run for the Cure, all that stuff. Everybody had bought into the idea that we are all a team and we're all better together. The other part of that culture that we really nurtured was sharing, because we had a lot of these very top producers. And it's the same thing that you see at Rebar Camp. It's the same thing that you see at any mentorship session within RE/MAX. You know, the word on the street is RE/MAX, you know, they're a bunch of sharks that eat their young. Nothing could be farther from the
truth.
Nothing could be further from the truth. So the whole sharing idea, people would come over, we'd have a mastermind session once a month, and pretty much half the company would show up to it. Everybody from the top person in the office to the brand new hire. And the amount of information that was exchanged and the enthusiasm that the newer people would bring in to maybe kickstart the people that were getting a little, you know, inured to the day-to-day activities, it's remarkable to see how that benefited from both sides of it, from all sides of it. So culture is everything when it comes to running a real estate
brokerage. We had this conversation the other night. Talking about sharing, talk about RE/MAX.
Culture is so important. It doesn't matter if, like, in your home or your relationship and your odds. So going to real estate brokerage team doesn't matter. I was with Century 21 the first year I was licensed. And when I joined Remax,
did you have one of the green jackets?
Gold.
Yellow.
Gold. Gold.
Old.
Baby diarrhea like, yellow, wasn't it?
I'm colorblind and not that old.
Black thumbs up.
Yellow thumbs up.
Anyway, yeah, no, it's so important. And even when I'm encouraging, like, so there's people that I know getting the real estate license, and I'm like, you just have to go to Remax. I don't understand why you would even consider something else. Having said that, I I've said this on social media, I bleed red, white, and blue, and I am that person. I'm sorry. I know there's great realtors out there in every brand, but I will not refer to somebody who's not, unless there's not a good Remax agent there. So I just want a shout out to Escarpment, because I was with Remax for 21 years, and then now, well, I've been with Remax for 22, but I switched brokerages to Escarpment just over a year ago. And the culture there is, it's amazing. It is a family, it's a team. It doesn't matter what you need done, it gets done. And the energy, I think that's what's most important, is the energy that you get from each other, right? And it lifts you up, and no negativity, like good culture. There's no negativity in our office. Just Kim and I. It's just Kim and I, and we always were positive. And so I think that, like you said, I love the Remax corporate. I love our brokerage, and I love what's going on right in our own little office. And because all of those levels are positive in nature, it helps you to just be productive and happy while you're making money.
Yeah. Now, Keith, as a team leader, you have the responsibility of culture in your group. So where does that list on your priority of having a successful team, $220 out to past clients? Where does culture fit in your responsibilities?
My breakout session tomorrow is actually about developing a better team culture. I take my team away on trips twice a year. We go up to Whistler in the spring. We go somewhere hot in the summer or in the winter. This year, we actually, the team hit the goal that I set for them for September. And so I'm taking the entire team and their spouses to Hawaii for a week in January.
Nice.
And we're building that culture as our team. Part of the reason we moved to Remax from our previous brokerage was, our previous brokerage had a great office, but the corporate culture was lacking. It didn't have what we wanted. And Remax has, more than any other brokerage, and I've been through all the brokerages, I've been to lots of conventions and NAR and all this other stuff. More than anything else, Remax has a culture of curiosity. The agents are curious to learn more. We're sitting here, and what the cameras can't see, we've got a number of agents who are just sitting here listening to us talk so that they can be better at their job.
But here's the question. Your curiosity to learn more, but isn't the thing, the culture is, you're curious because there's going to be an answer given. Where I was before, I could be curious all I want, but no one was going to give me the answer that kept me being curious. Don't you think that has something to do with
it? They may not have known the answer.
No, but I also think you can ask a question because you're going to get an answer.
Remax built a culture of curiosity. I mean, like you said off the top, this recharge event is happening in Toronto, Indianapolis, Minnesota, and Boston over the next couple of weeks. Well, I'm going to be giving a presentation on team dynamics and culture in Toronto. I'm going to be in Indianapolis, and I'm going to be in Minneapolis. And I know you're going to Boston. Yeah. So the opportunities of education and growth and learning are out there, and Remax takes that and brings it into your marketplace. They take best practices. I have some great practices on team culture that I'm doing in Vancouver that I now get to share with agents all across North America. R4 as a convention is far superior to what the National Association of Realtors puts on. That's the biggest organization of organized real estate in the world. And Remax puts on a better convention because the culture of curiosity exists all the way from the top down. So whether it's a corporate region, a corporate office, an Integra-owned region, Ontario, Atlantic, Europe, there's a culture of curiosity, of education, of bringing in speakers and training and best practices that is, again, far superior to any other brand.
And you've been with us. See, I say that. I had the ownership of the brand,
you're
right?
Us. Yeah. You're us.
Like for a year and a half now, right?
Just over a year. We were a year in August.
Nice.
You know, it's interesting you talk about the culture of curiosity because Remax was that brokerage and that culture right out of the gate. I mean, totally different compensation model when they started in 1973. You know, came to Canada in 1980. achieve number one market share because they were attracting all the top producers because they were curious about this new concept where they could make more money as top producers. First brand to promote women in real estate. First brand to really allow individuals to market on their own.
Yeah.
And that has just continued. It's actually remarkable over that 40-year history that they've been able to maintain that focus on being the innovators, being the cutting edge, the bleeding edge of the industry.
They're always providing what the curious agents are looking for.
All right, last question. And it was like I was out with Bruce and Tony. They left.
They literally
they came here, they got their minute, and they were gone. And we were sitting around last night, and I said, how about this question to sort of finish off the show? They said, that's an interesting question. So the question is this. How has the word no had a positive effect on your real estate business?
Wow. Well,
that's one way to produce dead air.
Well, I prepped Lori a bit so you guys could think about it a little bit. So Lori, you and I chatted about it beforehand. How has the word no benefited your business?
So it is enlightening, number one. It's enlightening, and again, I'm a big energy person, so it pulls you away from that negative. If there's something negative going on and you need to say no, when you do say no, you're pulling yourself away from the negative energy, which allows you to, you know, really do great things. You know, whether it's spending time with your family or focusing on the clients who really appreciate your value, really want to work with you. And I gave you an example. Yeah. I'm going to share it because, I'm going to venture to say that almost every, you know, experienced venture has had the opportunity to fire a client, and it is very uplifting.
Empowering.
If they need to be, empowering. Thank you. If they need to be fired, they just need, you know, and most of us will go as far as we can to that point before it happens. But I did, and this speaks very, very much to you dealing with people that you, that know, love, and trust you already. And we're speaking, Tony, Joe, and I tomorrow speaking on building solid relationships and referrals. And it speaks to that because if you're dealing with people that they already see your value. So I really tend to focus a lot of my business. I did get an internet lead and I pay for SEO, not that, but whatever. We all have to stay up with the times and technology. And I get this internet lead. And from the moment I answered the first email, and I kid you not, and I mentioned this to you, there were at least 45 emails in the span of 4 days, and every one of them were demanding, I want this, I want that. You have send me all your stats. When I sent her my stats, she was questioning the stats. She said, well, how come I saw this there? And, you know, and then even something is like this woman was researching us like crazy because she was like, well, why is Kim's LinkedIn account say she's only been a year? I'm like, no, that's a year at RE/MAX Escarpment. We were at, you know, it did not matter what I said to this woman. And then she would be like, you will be here on this day doing that and this day. And finally, 4 days into it, and I'd had the conversation with Kim, we're going to cut the ties here like real quick. So anyway, fourth day in, and I my final email to her was, I'm sorry, I just don't think we're a good fit. I just don't think I'm the right realtor for you.
Yeah.
And that by saying no to her allowed me to have time to spend with my family, friends, call a client, have coffee, go and see a client. The other day, one of my clients who I've sold 4 or 5 properties to over the course of, I don't know, 10 years, I showed up at her house with flowers and a sold clip. And I had gotten the waiver. I got in my car, I got the waiver. This woman was, lady couple was very nervous that their house wasn't going to firm up. The minute I got the waiver, I printed it off, jumped in my car with a sold clip and flowers. And I knocked on their door and there I was. And she started crying, hugged me. Those are the moments that we save time for when we say no to the wrong people.
Yeah, I have a favorite piece of language I use when I have to fire a client. It doesn't happen very often, but I usually will say, I really hope that you find the real estate representation that you deserve.
That's a good
you know,
one.
I shared a story, and Keith will come over to you in a sec, but sorry, same with you. I fired a client, buyer, couple, when I was 27 years old, and I think it was that day that I went from being transactional to having a real estate business. I think it was like in that moment where I realized, oh, I'm wasting my time. Like, they don't value me. Yeah, you know, I was chasing something. I was chasing a commission check, and then I realized, no, this is affecting my business.
That's a huge, huge concept, too. Yeah. Transactional to business.
Yeah. Love that.
That's everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I've had a little bit of time to reflect on the question now. So the way this has affected me, and this is maybe a little obtuse, but if you want me to achieve great things, tell me I can't do it, because I'll show you. And I was told that my previous career, I worked for a moving company. I was a sales manager for a moving company. Boss took me out, says, I told him I was leaving. What are you going to do? Going to be a realtor? He says, you'll be back in 6 months. So we went out for dinner and said, so how much money do you think you're going to make as a realtor? Back in 1984, being a cocky young buck, I'm going to make 100 grand in my first year. He laughed. He actually laughed and spit his drink out on the table. Well, I made $115,000 that first year because he said I couldn't do it. And that kept me making the calls, driving forward, motivation and drive.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Keith, for you, is there a way knows how to benefit on your business?
Just on the firing of a client, you know, we're obligated to take lawful instructions. We're not obligated to take stupid advice. and a lot of those requests are just stupid advice. And sometimes you just need to say no. But in terms of my career and where no has helped the most, a number of years ago, as I quite often do, I come out in the media, I make some controversial comments because some people agree, some people don't. And my broker told me I had to shut up. They told me I wasn't allowed to talk anymore, that some of the older agents in the office were upset that I was getting press coverage and they weren't. And I realized at that point that if I wasn't allowed to say what I was saying in private, in public, that I was at the wrong place. Mm-hmm. And that's what led ultimately to coming over to RE/MAX. Was someone telling me, no, you can't be who you are. You can't be the honest broker that you want to be. You have to fall in line with the rest of us and say the same thing. And when someone pushes you and says no, it really makes you realize where your beliefs are and what your limits are.
Yeah. It's interesting because on that note about going back to RE/MAX and go with culture is, you know, we started the show, Mobile Agent TV, Dave and I, sort of by accident shortly after I got to RE/MAX. And when we got on the air and we started doing this, I was like, when's the phone going to ring where RE/MAX says, you know, you can't do this. Because, like, their little logos on the, like, their logo. With my old brokerage, I don't think they would let me do this. RE/MAX has been nothing but, like, go to it. Knock it out. Go. Make it happen.
Let's turn it into a multi-day event.
like it's crazy, like, where they're still saying, no, you're doing good. You're an expert. Go and share that advice. It's
sharing.
Awesome.
Sharing.
Culture.
Sharing's
culture.
The key.
Yeah. Okay, so they're turning off the lights at 6 o'clock. We've done an hour. Keith, how do people who are watching this right now, today and in the future, get a hold of you, send you business, ask you questions, pick your brain, anything like that?
KeithRoy.com. My email is homes@KeithRoy.com. I work in the Vancouver marketplace and the kind of immediate surrounding suburbs, but I don't like to go more than one suburb out. Always happy to comment, help, offer insight whenever I can.
You know what? When I found out that you came to RE/MAX, because we knew each other before you with RE/MAX, it was a great fit, and I'm glad you're
for us.
A red, white, and blue. Lori, how do people get a hold of you in Burlington, send you referrals, ask you questions?
So Lori Van Dinther, RE/MAX Escarpment Realty, Burlington. It is LoriV.com, really easy, or Burlington-Homes.com. And I'm always willing to help refer, get referrals, and answer questions. I love this company. I love all the associates we get to work with. And thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me.
It's awesome. And Kim Miner. How do people get a hold of you, Kim?
That would be KIM.MINOR.
I don't know if we got an update. Kim's still like in North Carolina or something like that, and she's freaking out. She's speaking tomorrow, so Lori can do like two sessions or something like that, or Jeff can get up there and do it. Jeff, how do people get a hold of you and Bobby in Ottawa?
Two ways. Email, obviously, Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at G-E-O-F-F-Bobby, B-O-B-B-I-E.com. Or you can text me, 613-769-2183. That's my cell number. I always have it. I always answer it. And like Lori said, I'm lifelong RE/MAX, had the experience of being a broker, may have a few things to add to the conversation. So if you're looking for advice, if you're looking for help,
I love
please,
that.
Please contact me.
Dave, I know you're going to be watching this. This is the overriding common theme for 107 episodes is this complete willingness to share. It blows my mind. I should be used to it by now. I'm not. It's awesome. Once again, next week's episode, we have Glenn Shimkus. Used to be Cardiff, then they become a DocuSign. Huge announcement was made between DocuSign and Ray Max at the Broker Owner Conference. Some of the woodwork or some of the details are coming out, I think, tomorrow or at an event. I'm going to be talking about it here tomorrow. Amazing news. So jump in there. Join the conversation. That's going to be September 30th, Friday, September 30th at a regular time, 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern at mobileagenttv.com, as well as I'll be down on October 13th down in Boston doing another live event from Recharge. We have the Stone Sisters coming on soon. We've got a bunch of great guests coming on. So thank you all for watching. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everyone, for watching. We'll see you next Friday with Glenn Shimkus. Thanks for watching.
Thanks.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Mike.